he said, his voice a thin whisper. So did our captors. How? Entreri cried. What?
He faked his death,
Regis announced, rushing over to join them, having finally dispatched the crawling monstrosity.
Convincingly. He is a monk, after all.
Repeatedly, Afafrenfir confirmed. Whenever anyone was about. You could have let me know, said Entreri, for all the days I hung beside you.
That the Illithid might draw it from your thoughts?
You're lucky we didn't just leave you here, Entreri grumped. Afafrenfir started to rise, and Drizzt and Entreri moved fast to help him up. But they found immediately that they would have to fully support him if he was to remain upright. They eased him to a sitting position instead, and Drizzt called out to Catti Bri.
Now what?
Entreri asked Drizzt, when the group, now seven strong, was all together.
We should make for the exit quickly, Catti Bri said, and nodded at Wulfgar and Afafrenfir,
both sitting propped against the wall, both weak and weary, and in no condition for another fight any time soon. But Drizzt answered by bringing forth the mace the largest of the Driders had carried.
Amber is down here, he said. And Dahlia, likely both dead or taken away by those who fled, Entreri answered.
Like Efren?
So we should leave?
Drizzt asked. And it seemed more an accusation than an honest question.
No, Entreri answered. You and I should go and find them, and quickly.
Drizzt looked to Catti Bri, who nodded.
Not without meself, ye don't, Brunner grumbled.
Or me, said Regis.
Aye,
Entreri sarcastically replied. Because it would do well to leave our injured with the woman alone, to face the drow should they return through another course. Brunner made a noise that sounded remarkably like a growl, but Entreri ignored him.
Stealth, he said to Drizzt.
I'm as quiet as any,
Regis protested. And speed, Entreri added without missing a beat. He turned to Regis.
Then keep a silent watch, he said, and started off. Or tried to, but by that point, his adrenaline had played out and his knee buckled.
He pulled himself straight immediately and stood very tall, as if willing away the pain. A tap on his side brought Entreri from his self-imposed meditation to find Regis standing beside him, holding forth a small potion bottle.
Healing,
the halfling offered, and when Entreri took it, he handed him a second vial.
For the drow poison,
he explained. Entreri settled comfortably as the first potion filled him with warmth, and he tipped a nod to Regis before quaffing the second.
Off, he said to Drizzt. With all speed.
And he started away once more. Drizzt looked all around. He didn't want to leave his friends in this dangerous place, not for a moment, but he knew that Entreri was right, and that Amber and hopefully Dahlia needed him. He dropped Talmaril and the enchanted quiver at Catti Bri's feet.
You take it, she said.
But Drizzt just shook his head and sprinted away, hustling to catch up to Entreri. Regis moved around the forge, inspecting the work areas and pocketing more than a few items in that magical pouch he carried. Brunner went to the mithril door, nodding. He knew what lay behind it. It would not open, however, and he could find no handle to try to pull it in. He put his shoulder against it and pushed. But he might as well have been pushing against the mountain itself. Drizzt and Entreri, too, had gone to that door first, then had rushed off to the far end of the room, angling down the corridor where some of the drow had run off. Wulfgar, much improved by Catti Bri's healing, sat up against the wall, resting easily and with Aegis Fang close at hand. If the drow came back in, he would stand against them. Beside him, Afafrenfir lay on his back, working his arms up into the air in small circles, and his hands working in circles of their own, fingers lifting and closing as he tried to reawaken muscles that had been dormant for days. His voice was still thin as he explained the monk technique of feigning death to Wulfgar and Catti Bri.
Wulfgar listened intently and with an amused expression, for the warrior barbarian hadn't even learned the art of retreat, let alone faking his death to fool enemies. And Catti Bree did not listen at all, hardly aware of her surroundings. For in her head, the woman heard a call, quiet but insistent, a plea, and one from some being beyond her, some great creature, perhaps divine, though its mental intrusion seemed too foreign to be that of Mialiki's song. She didn't understand. She unwittingly clenched her hand. The woman leaned against the wall. Wulfgar's laughter interrupted her thoughts, and she turned to regard him, then followed his gaze and Afafrenfir's to the great forge centering the room and to Regis, who was trying to drag an enormous warhammer, a weapon made for a giant king, it seemed, and indeed it had been crafted for just that reason from the work table.
"What are ye about, Rumblebelly?" Brunner called from across the way.
Regis lifted up his small belt pouch, which seemed barely large enough to contain his hand up to his wrist. With a wry grin, Regis slipped the bag over the end of the weapon's long handle, and smiling all the wider, the mischievous halfling continued sliding the pouch up, the shaft disappearing within, seeming as if the magic was somehow devouring it.
"And how are ye to get the hammer's head over that little bag, magical or not?"
Brunner asked. For indeed it didn't seem possible.
"Well, come help me then,"
Regis argued back, and realizing his error, he began extracting the handle from the pouch. Brunner gave a great harumph and stood with his hands on his hips, but Wulfgar pulled himself up and started over. Catti Bree started to call out to him, to jokingly warn him not to let the light-fingered halfling near Aegis Fang. But she was interrupted before she even began by an insistent telepathic call. A plea to her, she felt, but in some language she could not decipher. She glanced at the mithril door just down the way and crunched up her face curiously, seeing that liquid was spilling out around it, steaming and bubbling. "Water?" she whispered, and realized that the door had opened a crack. She gathered up the bow and quiver, slinging both over her shoulder, and moved to the door. She easily pulled it wide, revealing a low corridor beyond. She lifted her hand, the light from the spell she had placed upon her ring stealing the darkness before her, and revealing to her a series of puddles along the floor, fast evaporating, billowing steam, though the woman, protected from fire as she was, couldn't feel the heat.
"Girl!"
she heard Brunner call out as she entered the tunnel.
"Girl!"
he yelled more frantically, but his voice was cut short as the heavy metal door swung closed behind her. Catti Bree went to it and pushed, but it would not budge. Strangely, she was not afraid, and the voice in her head beckoned her along. She made her way down the tunnel, pausing at one puddle, where a broken pile of fast-cooling black rock lay. She found more of it along the path, like volcanic spit in a riverbed, but she could make no sense of it. She exited the tunnel into the steamy chamber, coming out right beside a pony-sized green spider that seemed to twitch at the sight of her. Catti Bree fell back and turned into a defensive crouch, her hand reflexively going to her bow. She shook her head and did not proceed, though, thinking that its movement must be a trick of her eye and the swirling steam of this place, for it seemed just a statue. A beautiful jade statue, shining green against her light spell, and so intricate in detail as to appear lifelike. Still, when it didn't move, Catti Bree couldn't focus on it. The room around it seemed full of surprises and oddly mixed shapes and items. To her right, beyond and above the spider, loomed tapestries of impossibly thick hanging webbing that shimmered and seemed alive in the pressing waves of steam. Roving her eye out to the left and across the floor, Catti Bree noted an altar, black and shot with veins of red, as if carrying blood throughout the solid stone. Just past it loomed the ledge and a large pile of broken lava rock, steaming feverishly. Just past it lay the pit, with water raining down from above and steam billowing up from below, and Catti Bree felt herself drawn to the lip to gaze in. She saw the swirling cyclone of living water, and saw the fiery eye far below, and knew that fiery eye to be the source of the whispers in her head. She closed her eyes tight and concentrated, trying to hear the call, and saw in her mind's eye this very room, and her focus moved down along the ledge to a bridge, an anteroom, a lever. Catti Bree opened her eyes, shaking her head, for she could make no sense of this. She heard the call of the fiery primordial again, and saw again the small room under an archway, with a lever. The fiery beast wanted her to go to it, to pull it. She could feel its plea, its heavy heart, like a panther trapped in a small cage, or an eagle with its wings tied. She started along the ledge, past the altar, and through the swirling fog she saw a bridge crossing the chasm. Then she was upon it, halfway and more, and she saw a surge of water within the small room, rising up like a wave and rushing out suddenly at her, a great breaker rolling over itself, barreling toward her to throw her from her precarious perch. Catti Bree turned away and cast a spell, just in time to magically jump back the way she had come. The water crashed against her, hastening her journey, sending her into a flight that nearly flung her into the webbing as the water broke all around her. Broke, but did not dissipate. It flew together past her and rose up like some thick bear, watery arms outstretched and ready to batter her. Catti Bree felt its animosity, saw its rage, and as it rolled in at her, she lifted her hands, thumbs touching, and burst a fan of flames into it. That minor spell hardly slowed the great water elemental, of course, but in its hiss and the resulting gout of steam, Catti Bree managed a retreat. She ran to the altar and skidded around it, using it as a shield so that if the elemental tried to break upon her and wash her away, the altar stone would serve as a small seawall and breakwater. Her mind raced. She pulled Talmaril from her shoulder, but shook her head and dropped it to the floor immediately, realizing that using lightning energy against a water elemental might not be a good idea. Indeed, the only clear notion that cut through the jumble of her thoughts was the need for the opposing element, the need for fire. And so she began spellcasting, and the elemental charged, and she threw a fireball at her own feet as it swept upon her. Clenching her fist with her protective ring, she rushed away through the blinding flames, water battering her and crashing into her, and throwing her to the floor back near where she had entered the room. Instinctively, she started for the tunnel, but scolded herself for her foolishness before she had taken her second step, for surely the malleable water elemental could rush along that narrow passage and even drown her against the door at the far end. The elemental rose up around the altar, but not quite as huge, it seemed. The fireball had stolen some of its watery composition, turning part of the being to harmless, drifting steam. Catti Bree was already deep into her next spellcasting as the primal watery monster stalked in, rolling toward her like a giant ocean swell. Fires burned around her hands, sparkling and sizzling, and she punched them out, but not at the water elemental. Instead, she threw her last fiery spell, another wall of fire running at the length of the ledge, splitting the bare area of the chamber in half, and with the hot side of the wall burning back toward her, and toward the door and the wall and the webbing. When the water elemental didn't come through, Catti Bree leaped through her firewall and taunted it. How she could feel its seething hatred, as if she were a creature of the opposing plane of existence, as if she were a fire elemental instead of a flesh and bones human. Despite her towering wall of burning fire, the watery beast threw itself at her, roaring like a wave, breaking like the ocean surf. She jumped back through the wall of fire into the inferno, and the elemental, so full of irrational hatred, followed. The water break swept her from her feet, but did not wash her aside, and she scrambled along just inside the firewall, and the elemental pursued. The water rushed in around her, roiling and boiling and bubbling, those bubbles popping and spraying the woman. But she did not feel the heat of the boiling water, as she did not feel the flames. steam mixed with rolling angry fires, and she stumbled on, and when she felt no water around her any longer, she turned aside and dived back through the wall, into the clear and just past the altar stone. And there, back the other way, stood the water elemental, much smaller now, but no less angry. Catty Bree taunted it and held her ground, and again it charged, rolling in with the anger of a hurricane-driven tide, determined to smash a wharf to kindling. At the last moment, Catty Bree dived back through the wall, and more blue mist came from her sleeves, though it could not be seen in the swirl of fire. This spell was divine in source, calling to the stone beneath her hand, and she melded in with it, sinking her arm into it just as the water elemental fell over her. She could feel the anger in the sloshing waves. The beast roared in her ears, hating her, needing to destroy her. It tried to pull her back to the cool side of the wall, but the woman held her ground, her arm literally rooted to the stone floor. The elemental could not pull her free, could not take her away, and so it fell over her completely, holding its form around her, drowning her where she kneeled. She could not draw breath. She swatted with her free hand, but the water would not wipe aside, would not leave its press on her nose and mouth. She could not breathe, could not cast a spell. She felt as if a mountain giant was pressing a wet pillow over her face, and so she thrashed, but she could not budge the giant. Desperation drove her on. She felt as if her lungs would explode. And then she was moving, at least, back and forth in her jerking action, for now the mountain giant seemed more like an ogre. Her enemy had diminished. Catty Bree calmed immediately with that realization, conserved what little breath she had remaining. Darkness rose up around her, at the edges of her vision, as if the floor itself was swallowing her. With that troubling thought, the woman reflexively retracted her enchanted arm, breaking her meld, and now the water elemental could pull her from the flames that bit at it and bubbled it to harmless gas. But no, it could not, and the watery gag was gone, and even the steam diminished now. Catty Bree rolled through her firewall and lay on her back, gasping for breath. She feared that the elemental, too, had come through to the cool side, and would now fall over her once more. But no, it was not there. It was gone, destroyed, melted to steam and flown away. And the voice in her head returned, cheering, and she could understand it now and knew it to be the primordial. It spoke in the tongue of the plane of fire, and Catty Bree understood that tongue, though she should not. Images filled her mind, an explanation from the primordial. She imagined a humanoid that seemed made of magma leap from the pit and rumble down the tunnel. The magma elemental had opened the door, but the water elemental had pursued it and had battered it to pieces back along the corridor and had broken it fully over there by the altar where the steaming rubble remained. The primordial had opened the door for her, to bring her in here, to pull the lever, to free it. She could feel its outrage, and when she looked around at the room, she understood that outrage to be wrought in violation. And not from the dwarves who had built this place, no, nor the wizards who had contained the volcano beneath the power of the water elementals. This outrage was new, an anger wrought in pride, an anger festering, because the drow had dared turn this place into a chapel for the demon queen of spiders. Catty Bree pulled herself up from the floor, shaking her head, silently denying the primordial's pleas. How could this be? How could she understand the language of that otherworldly plane of existence? Her gaze went to her magically brightened hand, to the ruby ring. She had thought it a simple ring of fire protection, a fairly common item, but no, she knew now. No, this ring's enchantment went far deeper, was far older and many times more powerful. And it was a magic that had to be unlocked for the wielder to prove herself worthy. And Catty Bree had done so by destroying an elemental from the opposing plane, an elemental of water. Now with its magic fully engaged, this ring attuned Catty Bree to the plane of fire, and that magical connection deciphered the primordial's call. And through this ring, she could call back to it. Her firewall came down then, the magic expired. But still some small flames burned, for they had caught the webbing, layer and layer stripped away as tiny flames sparked and climbed. movement turned her gaze to the right, to the jade spider as it turned to her. Movement to the left showed her a second spider, similarly turning to face her.
"They are mine," came a voice directly above and in front of her,
and Catty Bree looked up to see a last layer of webbing burn aside to reveal a woman. An elf woman hanging there, her arms outstretched, her raven hair, shot with red streaks so similar to the altar stone, braided in a single line atop her head, and her face was marked with a multitude of blue dots. As she smiled and whispered the name of Catty Bree, those dots seemed to shift and join into an image. A spider. The newcomer drove her arms forward, and the pole from which she was hanging broke in half over her back. She dropped to the floor to land gracefully, half the metal pole in each hand, and she snapped her wrists suddenly, violently, and each of those poles became two, joined by a length of cord, became a flail, and the woman put the weapon into a spin.
"Catty Bree," she said again, wickedly, and she laughed.
She turned her head left and right and called to the jade spiders.
"Come, my pets."
And they did. And Catty Bree, her magic all but exhausted, stood with her back to the primordial pit.
Chapter 26 Proxy War. Drizzt and Intrary moved swiftly along the tunnel in short bursts, one darting to the next position at a bend or corner, then motioning the other to run past to the next. They passed the backside of the lava-made tunnel to the primordial chamber, to find that it had been sealed by the drow, by a wall of iron with some new masonry work securing it. Drizzt paused there, staring at the new wall, thinking of this and the mithril door with its new adamantine jamb. The dark elves were protecting the primordial pit. They had taken this place as their home. Drizzt knew this area of the complex fairly well, and he turned around to peer into the continuing tunnel on the other side of the corridor he and Intrary now traversed. He had battled a drow mage down there, along with the wizard's pet magma beast, which had carved these tunnels. From that mage, Drizzt had looted the ruby ring he had recently given to Catty Bree. He waved Intrary past the opening of the lava tunnel, knowing it to be a dead end. On they ran, leapfrogging past each other with practiced skill, and soon came to the entrance to a downward-sloping tunnel, wide and smooth and recently worked, including grooves from and for the metal wheels of laden ore carts. Down they ran for many strides, now side by side, for the tunnel was wide and straight with nowhere to hide. They came to a wide intersection, one passage forking left and down, the corridor continuing straight ahead, and a third passage breaking perpendicularly to the right. Unlike the other two, this third corridor was not descending. Drizzt motioned for Intrary to hold this position, then started away to the right. The tunnel opened left and right into alcoves, mining stations, Drizzt realized, seeing the picks and shovels and empty shackles staked to the stone.
"They've taken their prisoners with them," Intrary remarked, catching up to Drizzt in the culminating chamber of the wing, where three separate sets of shackles sat on the stone, mining tools beside them.
Drizzt led the way back in full run and turned down the main, central corridor and ran on for a long way. They found more side tunnels, more empty mining stations, and then a gruesome discovery. A pair of slain humans, very recently cut down where they worked.
"The drow have gone deeper," Intrary reasoned. "We'll find no living slaves."
Drizzt wanted to argue, but the reasoning was sound. They were far below the level of the forge already, and the tunnel before them sloped more steeply and would soon open into the deeper underdark.
"We have to return," Intrary said, or started to,
but Drizzt held up his hand for silence. Intrary looked at him curiously. Drizzt moved over and put his ear against the stone wall, then pointed to that side.
"The other passageway," he whispered.
As he neared the wall, Intrary too heard the rhythmic tapping of a pick against stone. In their hasty retreat, the dark elves hadn't cleared all of their slaves, apparently. The pair ran back up to the four-way intersection and broke to their right to the far fork. This one went on for some ways before they encountered any mining stations, but as they neared the initial one, they clearly heard the slave at work. It was a woman, a human. She shrank back as they neared, covering defensively.
"From port last,"
Entreri said, moving for the shackle and working fast to open the rudimentary lock. He looked at the woman.
"We're here to free you," he said.
And even as he finished, he pulled the shackle from her ankle.
"Where is Dahlia?"
A woman wore a confused expression.
"The elf woman," Entreri explained, his voice growing more insistent, more frantic. "She carried a metal staff. She was with me in port last. Where is Dahlia?"
"There are others,"
the woman answered and swallowed hard, clearly intimidated. She motioned down the tunnel.
"Wait here,"
Drizzt bade her, and he and Entreri rushed off. Within a few moments, a bedraggled man limped up to join the woman, then a third miner limped into the room. Drizzt and Entreri found just a few alcoves in this area, and soon broke out into another wide descending tunnel. And it seemed as if there were no more workstations to be found, for this place, much like the center tunnel, dived more steeply now. Drizzt motioned for Entreri to turn back, but the assassin sprinted out ahead anyway, his eyes peering through the gloom.
"Dahlia!"
he called softly. Drizzt moved up beside him and put a hand on his shoulder to steady him.
"We have to go," he said. "We cannot pursue a drow army into the deeper Underdark."
Entreri looked at him. And for a moment, Drizzt thought the man might simply lash out.
"We have wounded,"
Drizzt reminded. Entreri's shoulders slumped, and he gave a long and profound sigh, then turned back. But as he did, he caught some movement out of the corner of his eye. There was, after all, one more slave down here. She wasn't working, though, when the pair came upon her, but sitting sullenly on a stone, facing the wall, head in her hands. Entreri went for her shackle, and just as she turned, Drizzt put a hand on her shoulder. How the dwarf's eyes widened with surprise and joy. She grabbed at Drizzt as if to hug him and blurted his name, or tried to, but found her mouth filled with that sickly green spew and wound up coughing and spitting the cursed mucus all over the floor.
"Are there any more slaves?"
Drizzt asked, pointing farther along the descending corridor.
"Dahlia!"
Entreri asked, an edge of desperation growing in his tone. Amber gave an emphatic shake of her head and pointed to her work area, then down the hallway and shook her head again. So they rushed back, gathered up the three humans they had rescued, and headed back to rejoin their friends. Artemis and Treri glanced back over his shoulder with almost every step. Dahlia hesitated. Her twitch showed discomfort. Something was wrong. Something out of proportion and beyond reality. Catty Bree. The name screamed in her thoughts repeatedly. This was the ghost who had haunted Drizzt's dreams. This was the woman who had ruined Dahlia's life with Drizzt, who had tainted Dahlia's love with Drizzt before it could even truly bloom. Were it not for her? Dahlia found herself very near the altar stone then, facing the pit and Catty Bree, who stood across the block from her. Dahlia moved to the right. Catty Bree similarly shifted sidelong to keep the stone between them.
"Dahlia?"
the woman asked. And to hear this woman, Catty Bree, speaking her name, stunned Dahlia, as surely as a slap across the face.
"You are Dahlia, yes?"
Catty Bree asked.
"I have heard of you from Drizzt."
The words hardly registered to the elf woman. All she heard was a grating sound, a screeching sound, an annoying cackle at the back of her mind. The only word that came clear to her was, again,
"Catty Bree."
Only when the woman reacted did Dahlia even realize that she had spoken the name aloud. Dahlia's thoughts swirled back to the side of Kelvin's cairn in faraway Icewind Dale, where Drizzt had spurned her, had betrayed her, had chosen this ghost above her. No strike had ever wounded Dahlia as profoundly as the one she had delivered upon Drizzt, and with the hope of killing him. She had tried to kill him. He was the source of all of her pain, of all of her misery. It was because of him that Dahlia had gone to port last, had been captured by the drow, had been tortured. She felt the tentacles of the awful illithid wriggling inside of her. But wait, she thought. And she shook her head, for that mind flare had told her the truth at least. Where no one else ever had, the mind flare had made so much clear to Dahlia. No. Not Drizzt, she whispered, and Catti Bree wore a puzzled expression. From Drizzt, the woman reiterated. But Dahlia didn't hear.
Because of you,
Dahlia said pointedly.
Because of you, ghost.
She watched Catti Bree shaking her head, then bending low to retrieve her dropped bow. The bow. Oh, but Dahlia knew that bow. She thought of fighting beside Drizzt, of their brilliant teamwork when she intercepted his lightning arrows and redirected the magical energy to more pointed ends. She knew that bow, Drizzt's bow, and now this woman, this ghost, held it, as if mocking her, as if mocking the love Dahlia had known with Drizzt. A low and feral growl escaped her lips.
Dahlia?
Catti Bree said. Her voice calm and intentionally disarming.
Be at ease, Dahlia. I am not your enemy.
The altar thrummed to life before her, calling Dahlia to action, telling her to rise and vanquish this ghost, this woman who had caused her so much pain, this disciple of evil Mialiki. Dahlia barely registered the stream of thoughts, but she surely understood the call and promise of the altar stone before her. She sent her flail into a spin, banging them together, building a charge, then pounded them repeatedly on the altar, and the throbbing black energy pulsed within and lent her weapon more magical power. Dahlia! Catti Bree called to her, and Dahlia noted that the woman had backed from the altar, then had moved toward the tunnel to the forge. But she would not escape, Dahlia knew, not from here.
Destroy her!
Dahlia heard herself shout to the jade spider beside that tunnel, and surely the elf warrior would have been surprised had she stepped back from her rising emotions enough to decipher her own words. For how could she know the spider as an ally? Wulfgar brought Aegis Fang up over his shoulder and swung it across with all his strength. With a resounding thud and a reverberation that ran back up the barbarian's arms, rippling his muscles under the tremendous vibrations, it struck the door dead center, right in the heart of the Drider-like image of Lolth the drow craftsman had constructed of black adamantine, and bounced off. And neither the door nor the bas-relief of Lolth showed as much as a scratch. "Oh, me girl!" Brunner yelled, pushing in past Wulfgar, who staggered aside under the weight of his own blow. Regis, too, rushed for the door. "Pick it, Rumblebelly!" Brunner implored him. Regis glanced all around the portal and the new archway, and ran his fingers over the smooth, cool metal.
"Pick what?"
he asked, completely at a loss and holding his hands out helplessly, for there was no sign of a lock or even a handle to be found.
"Bah!"
Brunner snorted, and he hopped to the side and pulled Aegis Fang from Wulfgar, then leaped back for the door, Regis tumbling aside. Brunner noted the inscription on the warhammer's head, the symbols of his three gods overlaid, and from that reminder he drew strength. Great strength, the might of Clangadin, and he slammed the warhammer into the door with tremendous power, rattling the stones of the forge.
"Me girl!" he cried, and he hit the door again, as mighty a stroke as Wulfgar had delivered at least. "Me girl!"
He felt the power of Clangadin coursing his veins, growing within him. Tirelessly he pounded the portal. But it showed not a scratch. Catti Bree watched the woman slack-jawed, hardly believing the sudden rage that had come over Dahlia, who stood opposite the altar block, wildly banging her flail against the hard stone, her face a twisted mask of anger. And Dahlia screamed to the spider, a pony-sized beast behind Catty Bree, and with another across the way, and, she then noticed, with thousands of fist-sized arachnids gathering on the wall of webbing. Catty Bree turned fast, setting an arrow as she went. She called to the primordial, demanding help, as she drew back and let fly. "The lever!" the ancient beast replied in her mind. The spider shrieked horribly as the arrow blasted into it, throwing it back a skittering step. "I cannot get to it. My way is blocked by enemies," Catty Bree yelled in her thoughts and aloud, but in a language she could not consciously understand, a crackling, popping, sizzling series of sounds that made little sense to her human sensibilities, or to Dahlia's elven sensibilities as well, Catty Bree could see from looking at the woman, who paused in her drumming to stare incredulously. A second arrow followed the first at the nearby jade spider, and a third and fourth went quickly after, and the spider shrieked and ran off down the tunnel. Catty Bree pivoted, turning the bow upon Dahlia, who now stood on the altar, flail swinging easily. "I don't want to kill you," she started to say, but the floor rumbled and rolled, a great roar from the primordial below, and Catty Bree was knocked to one knee as Dahlia leaped off the side of the altar, away from the pit. Hissing and steam came from the pit, and a burst of fiery magma leaped up over the ledge to crash down in a pile behind Dahlia and the altar, between the elf woman and the second of her spiders. And not just normal, insentient lava rock. She heard its throaty grumble. She reached out to it through her ring, and it heard her call and rose up on two rocky legs. The jade spider nearby reared on its back legs and shrieked in angry protest, and the magma elemental came on unafraid. "Brilliant," Dahlia congratulated, but seemed hardly concerned. Again she put her flail into a spin and now began advancing slowly on the woman with the bow.
"Drizzt is with me," Catty Bree said. "He is here in Gontalgrim." "Cusor Lahrin,"
Dahlia corrected and kept coming.
"You don't have to do this," Catty Bree pleaded with her.
Looking past her, Catty Bree saw the jade spider go up into the air, its eight legs slapping and kicking at the elemental, mandibles biting in and breaking stone.
"Dahlia, I am not your enemy."
The elf woman laughed at her and continued her advance, now only a few short steps away. And from behind, Catty Bree heard the first spider's return along the small tunnel behind her to the right. Dahlia charged and Catty Bree let fly, the arrow aimed for the woman's belly, center mass. Catty Bree winced, thinking she had surely slain this poor elf. Yet the arrow did not strike home, but simply disappeared. And Dahlia's flail sparked with crawling, arcing sparks of energy all the more. Catty Bree turned Talmaril out defensively like a staff, parrying the first strike. But Dahlia came in at her in a blur, spinning left and right, one flying weapon going out left, the other right. Desperately, Catty Bree worked her bow in a circle, creating a spinning wall to block. But it could not hold, and she was not surprised when a flail slipped through her defenses and smacked her painfully across the thigh, nearly laying her low. And then she was surprised when Dahlia released the lightning energy collected by her weapon, the jarring bolt throwing Catty Bree back through the air to crash in hard against the wall, and only the wall was holding her up. Her mind spun as the elf stalked in for the kill. She tried to sort out her remaining spells, but they were few indeed, and none to lash out quickly or to properly defend.
"A ghost once more," Dahlia cried triumphantly and rushed in, and Catty Bree dropped her bow and brought her hands up, at first defensively, but hardly thinking.
She touched her thumbs together in a familiar pose and met the elf woman's charge with another fan of flame from burning hands. Dahlia screamed and fell back, batting her arms at the biting fires, and Catty Bree looked at her hands confused. She had no such spells remaining in her repertoire that day.
"The ring," she breathed.
But before she could consider it, she saw movement from the side, from a charging, rearing spider, its mandibles dripping with deadly poison, and she fell to the floor desperately. The rumbling belch of a primordial reverberated in the stone foundations of Gauntlegrim and into the underdark tunnels below. Drizzt and Treri, Ambergris, and the three rescued humans felt it keenly, the tunnel around them growling with vibrations. Drizzt and Treri exchanged concerned looks, understanding the implications both for their companions back in the forge and, for Treri, the possibility that he would never get out of this dark place alive. They started ahead more swiftly, but Drizzt paused and turned to Ambergris. "Turn left at the end of this passage and follow the right-hand wall of the next into the forge," he instructed, and the dwarf nodded. And Drizzt and Treri sprinted ahead, the assassin still laboring a bit on his wounded knee. The companions in the forge felt the growling too, and knowing that Catti-Brie had gone into that primordial chamber, and with Brunner knowing exactly what was in that place, they pressed on furiously with their work on the door. Brunner in particular threw himself against it, trying to wedge his fingers in between the door and the jamb that he might tug it open.
"Girl," he cried, "homie girl,"
and he fought furiously with a metal portal, and he yelled for Clangadin to give him strength and sought the god in his thoughts and memories of the throne above.
"No, dwarf,"
came a call from the side, the weak voice of Afafrenfir. All the others turned to regard the monk, who was sitting up now, and even that with great effort, obviously.
"Not that god,"
Afafrenfir advised.
"You'll not muscle the door."
"Eh?"
a confused Brunner asked.
"Three gods for the dwarves, yes?"
the monk asked. Brunner started to argue, but stopped short and looked at Afafrenfir curiously, hands on his hips.
"Eh?"
he asked again. But this time he was speaking more to himself than to the monk. The snapping mandibles were barely a hand's breadth from her face when Catti-Brie leveled Tolmaril and fired an arrow into the face of the jade monstrosity. The spider's shrill screech echoed off the walls of the chamber, and it staggered back a shuffle of steps. Catti-Brie shot it again. She turned to Dahlia and let fly another arrow, but lo, to slam into the ground before the elf woman, the force and jolt sending Dahlia scrambling backward. Catti-Brie spun back on the spider and charged, drawing closer, and shot it again and again. It tried to run away, but the woman pursued, pouring a line of lightning arrows into it, breaking it apart. One leg fell free, then a second, and finally, with a great shriek, the spider rolled over and shuddered in its death throes. And Catti-Brie whirled back and shot the ground at Dahlia's feet as the stubborn woman came on. The elf warrior was holding a staff now, though, and not her flail. And she drove it down to the stone, and though she shuddered, it seemed to Catti-Brie that her magical weapon had eaten the brunt of the blow. Indeed, it crackled once more with lightning energy, and Dahlia strained, it seemed, to hold on. Catti-Brie had no choice, and so she let fly another stream of lightning missiles at the ground before the woman and at the woman, an explosive barrage that sent sparks flying wildly all around the center of the chamber. Catti-Brie advanced, arrows flying, and Dahlia staggered under every blow, grunting and growling. Sparks flew off and dived into the primordial pit. Sparks showered the webbing, burning into the flammable material and sending spiders scurrying all around. Beyond Dahlia, through the crackling volley, Catti-Brie noted the magma elemental standing tall, holding the thrashing jade spider up over its head as it stomped for the pit. She entertained the notion of bringing the elemental in against Dahlia to catch her, perhaps, and hold her, for she did not want to kill this elf woman. The elemental threw the spider into the pit and swung around to Catti-Brie's call. It took a long stride at Dahlia, heading to Catti-Brie's defense, but before it put its foot down to the stone, it hesitated weirdly and seemed as if stuck in place, struggling mightily. And Catti-Brie understood and winced. For in its dying fall, the jade spider had spat its webbing back at the elemental, the filaments grabbing hold well enough to tug it suddenly and violently. The elemental pitched backward over the ledge, tumbling from sight and from the battle. Catti-Brie shot Dahlia again, and the elf trembled violently as the energy of the staff crackled and jerked her around. But Dahlia settled and screamed and charged, planting the pole and vaulting high, just as Catti-Brie shot the stone beneath her. And Catti-Brie also charged, fortunately so, for she slid down and crossed under the leaping Dahlia and skidded up to her feet and ran off the other way, calling to the primordial, calling to her ring. She leaped atop the altar and sprang away, and felt very sickly immediately from simply contacting the foul stone. She landed and she staggered, and she cried out against a demonic voice laughing in her mind. She feared that Dahlia was coming in fast behind her, and with a staff bristling with mighty energy. She knew she had to turn around and drive the woman back with more arrows, to overload the staff if that was possible, or at least to force it from Dahlia's grasp with the sheer strength of a teeming magical energy. But she couldn't turn, and she couldn't shoot, and it was all she could do to hold on to Tolmeril. Then she stumbled to the floor. And the demon in her thoughts, the demon queen of spiders, laughed. It was too much power. She should not have been able to hold it. But she was, her hands tightly clenched on the staff, crackling lightning rolling up and down it, rolling up and down her as well. The braid atop her head danced weirdly. She watched Catty Bree's flight across the chamber, watched her stagger down to the floor, and Dahlia heard cheering in her thoughts, even as her adversary heard the laughter of the spider queen. Dahlia slowed and winced. She thought of Drizzt, and not just that last encounter on the mountainside, but of their lovemaking, of their adventuring together, of their friendship. She thought of Efren, and of how her companions, how her friends, had rescued her from him in the docked boat, and had then given her the time with him to heal their wounds. And now he was dead, her boy killed by Drow. But the memory shifted before she could complete the thought, before she could realize that the Drow had done this terrible thing to her and to her son. And instead that line of thought swerved, leaping through connections that suddenly made perfect sense to the elf warrior. Efren was dead because of Drizzt. Because Drizzt had spurned her, and he had done so because of a ghost, because of this ghost, Catty Bree, this disciple of foul Mialiki. Last notion made little sense to Dahlia, who knew little of Mialiki and cared even less, but it didn't matter. For now it all made perfect sense. Efren was dead because of Catty Bree. Everything bad in Dahlia's life was because of Catty Bree. And now she could find revenge. She charged. She planted her staff at the base of the altar stone and vaulted high into the air, screaming with unbridled glee and unbridled hatred. Catty Bree came up to her feet and ran around to meet that flying charge, and Dahlia, landing right in front of her, could have ended the fight immediately, could have released all the power stored in Kozah's needle in one mighty blast that would have melted the woman where she stood. But no, that would be too easy. Too mercifully quick. Catty Bree deflected Dahlia's stabbing staff aside, then came up and across horizontally, bow held wide in both hands to block a powerful downward chop. The woman proved a decent fighter, parrying and angling her weapon appropriately to slide strikes harmlessly wide, but she was no match for Dahlia. And Catty Bree knew it. Dahlia could see it on her face. She knew she was overmatched. But she was not afraid. For a moment that puzzled Dahlia, but only for a moment. She understood that Catty Bree was buying time, and was she calling again to the primordial for help? Dahlia drove on more ferociously, pounding her weapon heavily, driving Catty Bree back with each strike. And the woman was running out of room, closing in on the wall. Dahlia increased her tempo, swatting and stabbing, rushing ahead and forcing her enemy ever backward. And when Catty Bree's back went against the wall, Dahlia swung mightily. Tolmeril came across to block, but as the weapons connected, Dahlia broke her staff in half, two equal lengths joined with a strong cord. The strike had been blocked above the halfway mark of the weapon, so that top half flew back over toward Dahlia as she drove the weapon down. She was ready for that, however, and she caught it, and now stabbed freely beneath the blocking blow. Catty Bree did well to drive her bow down to mitigate the attack, but as soon as Kozah's needle touched her chest, Dahlia released a bit of its energy, enough to jolt the woman against the wall, her head cracking hard into the stone. Dahlia retracted and dropped one of the two poles then, confident that Catty Bree was too dazed to respond. She swung around in a full circuit, letting her weapon fly out to its full length and rejoining it into a single staff as she went. She came around with great speed and power and batted Talmaril from Catibree's hands, launching it into the remaining webbing at the corner of the chamber, just to the side of the sealed tunnel meant for Matron Xerath. Hardly slowing, Dahlia slid one hand out wide and drove the staff sidelong before her, under the chin of slumping Catibree, lifting her up against the wall with Kozah's needle tight against her throat. Now it was personal, Dahlia thought, and she was pleased, and so was the voice in her head. Now she could feel the woman's fear. Now she could feel the woman's pain. Now she could watch the light go out in Catibree's blue eyes. "Now," Dahlia said, hardly aware of the words, "Mialiki will lose." And Dahlia was happy. Wulfgar pounded at the door while Regis crawled around the adamantine arch above it, looking for a lock or clasp or something that might spring whatever was holding it closed. Brunner, however, looked inside himself. He noted Afafrenthyr, nodding his way in encouragement, then closed his eyes and sent his thoughts back to the throne of the dwarven gods. He heard the song of Moradin, the roar of Clangadin, the whispers of Dumathoin. He opened his eyes and moved for the door, nudging Wulfgar out of the way. He begged silence from Clangadin, and begged wisdom from Moradin. Then he focused on the whispers, the secrets. This was still Gontalgrim, he was told, whatever the dark elves might be doing to deface the complex. This was still the realm of the dwarves, ever on and always before. The dressings on the door mattered not. Not the black bas-relief of foul Lolf, nor the adamantine arch. No, this was the same door, crafted of dwarf hands, set in stone by dwarf smiths, by Brunner's ancestors. He put his hand against the mithril. He was friend here, royal of blood, noble of deed, he told the door. Told the spiritual remnants the ancient dwarf craftsmen had imbued here with their love of their craft. He was friend to Gontalgrim, and this place remained Gontalgrim. The door itself seemed to breathe with life, the seal breaking as the portal swung outward. And Brunner charged in, Wulfgar and Regis close behind. Catibree couldn't respond. She couldn't draw breath. The staff, crackling with power, crushed in against her windpipe. Her eyes bulged, and she grabbed the staff in both hands, inside Dahlia's grasp, and tried to push back. But Catibree was in an awkward position, her head bent slightly by a jag in the wall, and she hadn't the strength to push Dahlia away, nor the mobility to even twist her neck enough to get the press off of her windpipe. And there was another power in the staff, a dark energy that she could feel as tangibly as the metal of Kozah's needle. She thought of the altar, pulsing as if alive, and the feeling of weakness and sickness as she had stepped upon it flashed in her now fleeting thoughts. Now fleeting because she was falling away, the edges of her vision darkened. She thought of Drizzt and wished she had said goodbye. But she was at peace, because she knew that she had done Mialiki's bidding, that she and the companions of the hall had saved him. In that notion, Lolf might win now, but Catibree had done as the goddess had bade. A sharp recoil sounded in Catibree's mind, a shout of, "No!" as profound as if she had screamed the word aloud. This was not about Drizzt, not now. This was about Mialiki and Lolf. This was about Catibree and Dahlia, proxies for the titanic struggle. Catibree could not be content with her efforts atop Kelvin's cairn. Who would Drizzt be without her? How could he withstand a broken heart yet again? Or Brunner, her da, or Wulfgar, or Regis. She could not, must not surrender until the end. She could not be satisfied with past victories when present battles raged. She had but a fleeting moment of consciousness left, and in that instant she recalled Dahlia's drop from the webbing, when the elf warrior had broken this strange staff in half across her shoulders. Catibree's fingers played along the length of the metal pole. She sent the last vestiges of her conscious thoughts into that weapon to find its secrets. Then she pushed out with every bit of strength she had left, at last a desperate gasp and grasp for life, and as she did, she tried to drive her head forward, meeting the press, and as she did, her fingers found the secret of Kozah's needle, and she released the staff into two parts.
The break of the weapon released her so suddenly, and her head snapped forward, her forehead crashing against startled Dahlia's nose, slamming the woman backward in a stagger, and in that awkward shuffle, her staff, the focus of her balance, suddenly broken in two, Dahlia couldn't hold on. Catty Bree, her teeth chattering from the sheer power contained within the weapon, yanked Koza's needle from Dahlia's grasp and drove the ends back together, trying to hold on to it. She looked at Dahlia then, blood running down the elf's face from her shattered nose, and an expression on her face that Catty Bree couldn't begin to comprehend. As soon as she had inadvertently let go of the weapon, a staff teeming with the imbued dark energies of the altar, Dahlia's connection to the darkness had diminished just a bit, and beside those feelings of hatred for Catty Bree, of blame for the death of Efren, came the gentle images of Drizzt once more, and the companions she had known, and the sea journey where Efren and she had found peace. She thought of Drizzt and tried to reach for him more fully, but could not hold, his image fading from her to be replaced, to her surprise, by one she suddenly realized as more dear. By the image of Artemis and Treri. She heard his words to her, of comfort in his own way, but of understanding, and in them the whisper of a better way and a better life, the distant whisper of hope itself, and the turmoil of Dahlia, the great paradox of love and hate that had twined together throughout her life, that had carried her through murderous battles with her every lover, shocked her, and infused doubt against the red wall of outrage. She felt the Legni's violation once more, saw the murder of her mother, threw her infant baby from the cliff. Zas Tam leered at her, her dying lovers cried out for mercy she would not afford them. The cackles of Lolth met the sobs of broken Dahlia. She didn't know what to do. A voice screaming in her head to launch herself back at Catty Bree. A wound in her heart telling her to fall down and cry. She stumbled back from the wall and turned and had to get out of there, had to get away from this woman she faced, from the awful truth of herself and her miserable life. She started to run for the far exit, the tunnel to the forge, but in rushed the red-bearded dwarf, the huge barbarian, and the clever halfling, the other ghosts that haunted Drizzt Do'Urden. The other companions returned to life to stand with Drizzt against the Dark Lady, against Lolth. Against wretched Dahlia. Yes, wretched Dahlia, she knew, and she let out a cry, part anger, part remorse, part profound sadness. And she turned to her right, to the pit, and thought to leap in and be done with the pain. She took a running stride, but a sharp voice in her head denied her. No, came the order she could not resist. The order from Lolth, the order relayed through Methil, hidden invisibly across the way, who spoke for Lolth. Dahlia skidded to a stop and whirled around, then sprinted for the one remaining opening, the entrance to the sealed tunnel meant to serve as Matron Xerath's chamber. The remaining webs parted for her, and in her mind she knew that the magical wall of iron would be dispelled, freeing her to the lower tunnels, saving her to fight and win another day. Catty Bree watched the woman's run, and saw her companions entering the chamber, but only distantly did those images register. Her focus had to be the staff, Koza's needle, and the tremendous power contained within, curling tendrils of energy that battled her as surely as Dahlia had battled her. Her own lightning from Talmaril arced and ran around the weapon, combining with the dark powers from the altar. And within those black energies lived a flicker of the Spider Queen, a conduit to the mind of the Dark Demon Queen of Spiders. In that staff, Catty Bree heard the thoughts of Dahlia, the telepathic exchange between the elf and the goddess. She felt the turmoil, the battle light and dark, and she knew that Dahlia meant to end her struggle by leaping into the pit even before she saw Dahlia turn that way. And Catty Bree, too, heard the denial. The darkness refuting Dahlia, the darkness dominating Dahlia, and as Dahlia spun around and rushed into the second tunnel, Catty Bree felt her hope for freedom, that she could turn again upon Drizzt and his friends as an agent of Lolth. Catty Bree could hardly hold the staff, and she too turned for the primordial pit,
thinking to feed the godlike primordial beast this tainted weapon. But mercy stopped her. Mercy for Dahlia and her dismayed realization that Dahlia had lost, and Dahlia was lost, and this realization turned her back fast the other way. Koza's needle, teeming with power, flew spear-like into the tunnel behind the retreating Dahlia. It hit the wall just inside, and the resulting explosion shook the ground with the power of an earthquake, and as she tumbled down, Catty Bree feared that she had just broken the whole of the place and perhaps had freed the primordial.